House Elections Committee to order. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Thank you, Representative Vernig, for bringing the donuts. If anyone didn't get any, there's some up there. A quorum is present. So the first item on the agenda, welcome back, by the way, I guess I should say also. we'll get to the new member or introductions. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the May 2nd, 2023 minutes. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for May 2nd, 2023?
Mr. Chair, I would like to approve the minutes for May 2nd, 2023.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. The minutes for May 2nd, 2023 are approved. Next, we have a couple new people just that we wanted to introduce. First is Representative Bianca Vernig. Congratulations and welcome to the Elections Committee. Did you have any words for us?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, glad to have you.
Excited to be here.
Okay, second, we have a new researcher for the House GOP, Jacob Grundhauser. Would you like to say anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been with the House since 2019 and looking forward to working on housing and elections issues this year.
Glad to have you here. Okay, with that, the first bill on the agenda is House File 3447, relating to polling places on college campuses. Representative Purcell, would you like to move that House File 3447 be recommended to be placed on the general register?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. It's been moved, and then I understand you have a DE2 amendment. Would you like to move that?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do you have any description of the amendment you want to give us before?
I'll just describe both of them at the same time.
Okay, so this is to put the bill in the shape you would like?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, is there any discussion to the DE2 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the bill is in the shape you would like. The amendment is adopted. Representative Purcell, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. House File 3447 is an opportunity to ensure more college students are able to cast a ballot, and perhaps for the first time. The first time I was eligible to vote, I remember how excited I was to have a voice in our state's future and in our democracy. Participating in Minnesota politics is a great way to increase students' interest and engagement in the future of Minnesota, a state perhaps they grew up in, or where perhaps they'll choose to stay if they came from out of state. Regardless of where college students live, if they are eligible, students too have the right to vote. Currently, some post-secondary schools host Election Day polling places. Many do not. This bill proposes that if requested, one day of early voting could be requested on campuses with 1,500 or more students. For example, in District 58A, where I represent, there are two small liberal arts colleges, one of which has an on-campus polling place on Election Day, one of which does not. And we see the pretty stark disparity in voter participation in each of those. House File 3447 will remove proven barriers to participation. Information, transportation, and time for young adults currently in colleges of all kinds of institutions across Minnesota. Given that young adults are least likely to own a car, and many 18 and 19-year-olds do not even have a driver's license, it can be very difficult for them to reach early voting and Election Day voting sites. In one survey, the second most common reason youth gave for not voting was the lack of time to vote between classes or jobs. Inconvenient polling locations and lack of transportation were also named as barriers. An early polling location on campus would address these concerns, if not eliminate them entirely. I'm excited that this bill will expand access as well as participation by the newest voters, young adults, and in doing so will promote lifelong voter participation, a habit that will continue their whole adult lives. House File 3447 offers students a valuable tool to boost these efforts and increase student participation. You will find letters of support in your packet, and I have testifiers on hand as well, and I'd like to allow them to share why they support this bill.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. I do have four people who have signed up. First on the list is Ben Reimler, and hopefully you pronounce your name similar to the way I pronounce mine, otherwise I'm going to be embarrassed. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Chair Freiberg, Ranking Member Torkelson, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today on Representative Purcell's House File 3447. For the record, my name is Ben Remler, so you're very close, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for Students United. Students United is the statewide student association representing all current, future, and former students attending Minnesota State's seven universities. With many excited and engaged voters on our campuses, Students United is committed to strengthening and improving Minnesota's election laws for future generations. This is why we encourage lawmakers to enact automatic voter registration, the pre-registration of 16 and 17-year-olds, and expanded access to the ballot by allowing all voters to choose to vote by mail last session. We were proud to see these provisions become law last year, but we know that more work needs to be done. In fact, before the transformative changes made during last year's session, Minnesota had not kept pace with innovative policies that allow for greater access to the ballot box, with the cost of voting index ranking Minnesota 24th in the country in relative ease of voting. And this is why we're excited to support House File 3447. Across our campuses, students are eager to participate in our democracy, but we know students often face particular challenges in accessing the ballot. For example, young adults are less likely to have their own mode of transportation, making it difficult to get to early voting locations, which are off campus. Students also tell us their inability to get off campus throughout the day because of work or class schedules is a significant obstacle to voting. Fortunately, this bill would address these barriers, and we ask for member support. Once again, I want to thank Chair Freiberg, Ranking Member Torkelson, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Ben Remler. Next on the list is Nicole Freeman. And after Nicole Freeman will be Karina Vieda. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, members and Chair Freiberg. My name is Nicole Freeman. I serve as the Government Relations Director of the Office of Secretary of State. Hope you all had a great interim. It's good to see you again. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3447. The Office of the Secretary of State supports the efforts to expand access to absentee voting, which this bill does by allowing a college or university to request a temporary absentee location on campus. We know that since the adoption of no-excuse absentee voting, more Minnesotans are choosing to vote early by absentee ballot. In 2022, nearly 23% of voters chose this method of voting to cast their ballot. College may be the first time that a person votes. Having an in-person option on campus to vote allows a voter both the convenience of casting a ballot in person, but importantly allows them to work with an election official directly to cast their absentee ballot. They can get their questions answered and ensure that they're completing all of the materials correctly so that they're confident their ballot will be properly cast and counted. Finally, we appreciate Representative Purcell's continued conversations with county and city election administrators on this legislation. As we consider changes to the system to expand access for voters across Minnesota, it's important that those tasked with administering the elections be a central part of those discussions. Over the past 8 months, the Office of the Secretary of State and local administrators have partnered and worked to implement the expansions to voting access passed during the last session. Their partnership during this process has been greatly appreciated. And the elections this year will be the first time that many of those provisions are implemented statewide. So the office looks forward to continuing to work with the committee and election administrators to continue the tradition in Minnesota of secure, free, fair, and accurate elections. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Karina Vieda, and after Karina Vieda will be Sia Shalar. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, committee members. Thank you for having me. For the record, my name is Karina Vieda, and I'm a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus, and previously I attended Inver Hills Community College, where I helped students exercise their right to vote. First and foremost, I want to extend my gratitude to Representative Purcell for championing this legislation and valuing the input of students like myself. Voting stands as a cornerstone of civic engagement, offering young individuals a powerful platform to shape the trajectory of democracy. While just one aspect of civic involvement, voting holds an immense sway in amplifying the voices of the youth and influencing issues relevant to our lives. Although historically youth voter turnout has lagged behind other demographics, recent elections has seen a remarkable surge in participation among young voters. Notably, Minnesota students have led the nation in student voter turnout over the past three elections. However, disparities persist, stemming from unequal access to information, avenues for engagement, particularly across racial, ethnic lines, educational backgrounds, geographical regions, and age groups. Research conducted by the Center for Information of Research, Civic Engagement reveals that non-voters often cite transportation challenges and inconvenient poll locations as barriers to voting. To address these barriers, opening an on-campus polling places proves effective. For instance, in 2018, students at St. Paul College successfully implemented this same approach, resulting in increased accessibility to marginalized communities. Unfortunately, bureaucratic hurdles have hindered the expansion of such initiatives to more locations. This legislation aims to streamline the process, facilitating establishment of additional voting locations on campuses statewide. I was once among the unlikely voters. At the age of 25, the 2022 election marked my first time casting a ballot. In high school, I felt disenchanted, believing that my voice didn't matter and lacking guidance on navigating the democratic process from my Salvadorian parents, who were focused on making ends meet as small business owners. It wasn't until I entered college that I grasped the workings of democracy and found my voice. This underscores the pivotal role that higher education institutions play in nurturing not only skilled professionals, but also informed and engaged citizens. With this legislation, Minnesota will continue to lead the nation in voter turnout, cultivating a new generation of active and empowered citizens like myself. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And the last testifier who signed up is Sia Shalar. Welcome to the committee. Once you've taken your seat, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and committee members. My name is Sia Shalar, and I'm a freshman at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm a part of our undergraduate student government, and I work closely with our government and legislative affairs team. I'm here today to support an amendment to House File No. 3447 that allows a student government organization of a post-secondary institution to request an additional polling place for at least one day on the institution's campus. I would first like to highlight the enormous amount of collaboration, dedication, and commitment our organization takes. Our president, vice president, and various representatives are entirely elected by our student body. We have over 30 staff members that handle both internal and external affairs, as well as interact directly with administration and students on various projects to improve our university. We also provide a role within our organization called a student group representative, a position that allows one member of any registered student group on our campus to hold voting power. We interact with students of every background, and our mission is to represent and uplift students' voices in any way possible to create lasting, meaningful change that is not only beneficial to current students, but students entering the University of Minnesota in the future. This access to a polling place at the University of Minnesota is extremely important for the representation of youth within politics. According to the Andrew Goodman Foundation, research demonstrates that greater access to on-campus polling locations correlates with increased student voter turnout. This on-campus polling site would also address the issue of difficulties in finding transportation and the time that voting takes, which is a huge hindrance to our full-time students, a majority of whom do not own vehicles. The ability to request a polling place would also allow us as student government to create equal opportunities for all racial groups. As according to Circle, young adults who are white vote at higher rates than young adults of color. It is extremely important to amplify students of all backgrounds, and that would be greatly improved through these on-campus polling places. Undergraduate student government represents over 30,000 students at the University of Minnesota. I urge you to consider the importance of allowing organizations such as ours to be able to request polling places on behalf of all of these students, giving them a platform that would allow them to participate in our democracy without having to make sacrifices for an endeavor that should be easily accessible. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, we can turn to member discussion. Do any members have any questions or comments? Representative Davis, then Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's wonderful to be back and to see all your faces again. My question, thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing this to committee. How is this going to be funded?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that this would fall under the funding of the county, whoever that local polling election, I don't know the correct words, the institution that dictates the polling place.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're going to have an unfunded mandate that the counties are going to be responsible for. And you had said that every student has a right to vote. Do college students have the right to vote right now, Mr. Chair?
Representative Purcell.
Those who are American citizens, yes.
And over the age of 18.
And over the age of 18 and all the other requirements.
Yeah. Representative Davis.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chair. We have an unfunded mandate for counties here when college students already have the right to vote. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact number. Help me out, Representative Purcell. But how long is early voting? How long can a person go in and start voting? What's the days there? How many days?
Representative Purcell?
I don't have that number off the top of my head.
And I honestly don't either. I just.
Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, the absentee voting period begins 46 days before Election Day, and there's a shorter window of time where you can vote early, which is the ability to vote using a live ballot box, and I believe that is 17 days.
18
days.
Representative Davis.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So here, college students, they already have the right to vote. They have a month and a half, 46 days to get that done, to vote. But here we're going to set up a polling place on college campuses that we're going to expect the counties to take care of all the funding and the staffing and the organizing for it. And again, this is going to increase costs. When they already have a month and a half to vote, they already have the right to vote. I think this is very fiscally irresponsible for us, once again, as a state, of wasting taxpayers' money. And to me as well, I just want to bring up this point, Mr. Chair. If voting is important to a college student, which I hope it is, okay, I really hope it is. I want voting to be very important to every legal citizen in our state who resides in Minnesota, who is considered a resident of Minnesota. I want them to go and vote. But I also want us to be very careful how we are spending, making decisions that the county is going to have to fit the bill for. So to me, this is fiscally irresponsible. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I do have five members on the list, so if we could try to keep our questions somewhat brief, that would be helpful. We do have two additional bills. Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be a question for Ms. Freeman. It's kind of just a technical question. So it says, if requested, the clerk must establish an additional polling place for at least one day. So presumably that means they could establish it for more than one day. And my question is, how is the time that polling place is on campus agreed upon?
Representative Purcell, did you want to take this, or would you like Nicole Freeman to come back down, as Representative Coulter requested?
I would love if Ms. Freeman is able to return to the dais. Thank you.
Welcome back to the committee, Nicole Freeman. Please respond to the question.
Thank you, Nicole Freeman. The way that the bill reads, what I would assume is that it's an agreement between the county and the institution. So,
okay, so
Representative Coulter.
Presumably that would fall then under the same agreement at which the location is agreed on and so on.
Nicole Freeman?
Yes, I believe so. The county would be able to, I think in this situation, ultimately the minimum requirement is one day, and so if it would be on the county to choose to offer it, or the local government to choose to offer it more than one day.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Altendorf.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing this. I had a question just real quickly on how did you establish that number of 1,500?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We went back and forth many times. We got information from the higher education researcher to figure out how many schools this would apply to. I was partial to the 1,500 because then that includes both of the schools in my district, the smaller of which does not currently offer a polling place on campus. We kind of went back and forth about what makes it make sense that there's going to be a cost and that really incredibly small institutions, if they don't have enough voters, is maybe not worth the cost benefit.
Yeah. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern, I guess, would be, and I would wish that we would take this into consideration, is in one, you know, we're saying two different things. You know, we're saying we care about everyone's voice and we want everyone to have that opportunity to vote. And then on the other end, I very much look at this could be a very biased decision of why we're putting this in here, because smaller schools might tend to lean more conservative. And my other question would be, like, you know, why are we targeting higher population liberal, you know, arts colleges, like you said, of your own? And so that is concern to the public, that we are picking and choosing who we are driving to the polls to vote. And I do think that in a elections committee, which up until 2023, the state of Minnesota has really had this committee be very, nonpartisan, and we respected that to the state of Minnesota. This last year in 2023, it was very, very appalling to see that the Republicans' bills were not heard and that it was so one-sided in this committee, and there was no partisan, there was not bipartisan support on these bills. So I do think that this is a red flag. I'm going to point that out right away, but if we're going to continue this again in 2024, as we did in 2023, it looks like one side of Minnesota's voices will not be heard.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Altendorf, for bringing that up. This is still very much, we've been going through different iterations, so I'd be happy to look at that. That honestly did not occur to me. So as this goes through the Senate, We can discuss changing that number, and I just take a little umbrage with we're not driving students to vote. We're offering more accessibility for them.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. I appreciate the bill, and I wanted to kind of, I had hoped originally to underscore the fact that this bill was slightly narrowly tailored for these, and I think you suggested potentially one day when might be a good number, but certainly those larger institutions might choose to do two or three, if that makes sense for their population. But I really appreciate that fact, and I know it was brought forward. You know, we do acknowledge that there will potentially be a cost with these things. And if members recall, last year we did approve a voter fund, which would allow counties to get assistance with funding these types of activities that allow folks to actively participate in the democratic process. They allow them to have access to polling places in and around where they live. And I think that's really important to keep in mind as we weigh this issue. And I will say that either way, I think having that fund was something we felt very strongly about. But I also want to say that I don't think that's a waste of taxpayer dollars to make sure that folks have access to participate in what is probably their most critical role as a citizen. In fact, I would argue that is probably the strongest and best role any citizen should have. So I think one of the roles of government, it's important that we meet people where they are, and I think this bill absolutely does that, and so I am really grateful that you've brought it forward, and I look forward to seeing it continue on its path. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on one of the things that Representative Davis here said is, that currently we already have access to 46 days of early voting. absentee balloting. Now it's permanent if you want to become an absentee voter. And current law allows the local government units to set up a temporary additional polling places. They can already vote absentee in these places, so they already have a place to drop it off. And most college students are I don't know if transient is the right word, but they're not permanent residents of that facility. And by doing this, you're going to be pulling them away from their local voting places back home, where they have ties and actually understand what's going on, and bringing them, making it more accessible for them to change their polling location to the college that they're temporarily residing at, which is fine if they want to do that. But again, in current law, it allows the county to set up a remote polling or mail-in drop-off. So I think that, again, what Ben was saying there, Representative Davis, is that it's something that's already covered. They have 46 days to vote. It's going to put an additional cost to the counties. I do have a question, though, and legit. What happens if your college spans across multiple precincts? Do they have to set up three precinct polling places?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, these are discussions that we were having and looking into the actual data of how many campuses that applies to, how many institutions that applies to, both if there are two separate locations. For example, University of St. Thomas, they have a Minneapolis campus, they have a St. Paul campus, as well as my town sits on two different counties. So trying to look and see if there are institutions that straddle, you know, multiple of those jurisdictions. And my understanding is how that, like, the ward and precinct, how those delineations are made is happening at a local level. And so hopefully the idea is, and maybe Mr. Gary could correct me, but the idea is that then this is locally led to figure that part out.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Yeah, I think Mr. Gehring might have, I was just asking, the way I read the language, it just says the county auditor or municipal clerk must establish an additional polling place. So the way I read it, only one polling place would be required. Is that, maybe you could just confirm that, Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I think I would agree with that reading. The grammar seems to suggest just a single location could be established.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yeah, Representative Blitz.
So, for instance, and I haven't followed up after the last realignment of the precincts, but I know Bemidji State, I used to represent that area. They had one part of their campus was one precinct, one part was the other. And if they set up a polling place, they would have to have staff there to ask where you live and have multiple different, and that was a small college, relatively small college. They'd have two polling, two sets of ballots, and they'd have to verify who's where. Is that how I'm understanding that? You'd have to verify which ballot the voter would have, so they would have to be multiple ballots there.
And yeah, maybe, and Nicole Freeman, maybe you'd be a good person for this. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Nicole Freeman. At an early voting location or an in-person temporary location like this, the county would bring all of the ballots for the whole county. So any eligible voter within the county would be eligible to vote at this location as well. So it could theoretically not only serve the students on campus, but, you know, anyone who worked on campus or lived near campus and wanted to utilize that location as well.
Yeah. Representative Bliss.
Thank you. Just a closing statement. I think the logistical nightmare this might present, considering the fact that we have 46 days of early voting, there's already an ability to set up a ballot place for the early voting. I think it's fiscally, as Representative Davis said, unresponsible, and I think it could be a logistical nightmare.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, with the definition of the size, it's pretty easy for fiscal staff to be able to see there are X number of these possible locations to be able to come up with a fiscal note, because there's additional equipment that would be needed quickly if you add additional sites. I do appreciate the author having 53 days, so it is 6 days before the 47 days in the earlier part of this section of law for the temporary ones. So there, it, you know, that way they see, oh, I don't need a temporary one in that location. It's already there. The discussion, it's not just, well, first of all, it doesn't matter the location of the school that you're attending. It's the location of your residence. So I know there are campuses where they have students that are attending that are from different counties, different school districts, different cities, let alone different precincts. So the possible number and variation of ballots is extremely complex. The intent, I understand, but the actual execution would require such a diverse process and quantity of ballots that it might become very problematic. I will give a related example. There is a precinct in Dodge County, and the people vote there, but some of the people have a different ballot because they're in a different school district. So same precinct, but we've got to have multiple ballots. And they've had problems with not having sufficient ballots to cover that issue. So I would think we really need a very good research of the complexity that we're trying to push, because on the temporary locations, you have the word may. And the new language, it's must. And if you're forcing somebody to do something with less than 2 months' notice, that they would have to analyze over 1,500 students for what are the different residencies, precincts, cities, counties, etc. What are the number of ballots that we're going to need and of what type? That is not a trivial issue to be able to do the logistics. And oftentimes the implementation of a law or statute is much more complex and difficult than the original intent. And I think at this time, since we do not have a fiscal note, we do not have an idea of the amount of burden we'd be putting upon with a dictated must. Some counties don't have huge staffs, but they might have within their county one of these institutions, or maybe two. And, frankly, I think it needs more due diligence before we go forward with implementation of this. But I do commend the additional 6 days and the intent, but I think I've made it pretty clear we've got more questions than answers at this time.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for you. Are you in possession of a letter from the Minnesota Association of County Officers regarding their concerns about this bill?
Okay. My understanding is there was an error in formatting of that, so it wasn't printed or able to be included in the packets, but it was posted on the committee website.
My copy is quite legible, Mr. Chair. I don't see why it wasn't distributed to this committee.
Representative Torkelson, when the document was submitted via email, the file was corrupted, and so when we tried to open it, it wouldn't open. I got notes from a couple members, lobbyists, as staff, saying it wouldn't open. I took the letter, and I copied it into Word. I posted it to the website, but there wasn't time to get it printed for this morning.
Well, Mr. Chair, this letter should be copied and printed and accessible to the members of this committee. It's critical of the bill concerning the costs involved. It feels to me like you're suppressing information that's valid to this committee.
Represent.
Let's not get into motivations here. Like, these formatting things happen. This is a problem for staff. I'm just pulling it up on the committee website now. Anyone else is welcome to do that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll read a quote from the bill.
Sure, please.
From the letter. A temporary polling place on a post-secondary institution's campus may be part of the plan for an efficient and effective election. However, it is already authorized under current law and should not become a mandated if requested. It should not become mandated if requested by the institution. These folks have concerns. I don't know why they've been eliminated from the agenda.
Yeah. What? I beg your pardon? Okay. Yeah, they didn't sign up to testify. There was a technical problem with the letter. It is publicly available on the website. We all have access to it on our devices. But thank you for raising the issue, Representative Torkelson. Representative Purcell, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson?
I'm not quite done.
Okay, sorry. I misinterpreted your...
In regard to, for the author, in regard to the question of 1,500, this number seems rather arbitrary. I have a college in my district that happens to have about 800 students. It seems like you've picked a number based on your own personal situation. It may not be appropriate for the entire state.
Representative Purcell, I think you sort of covered this before by stating that, you know, it wasn't really practical from a cost perspective for colleges with not that many voters, but do you have any additional comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to go down to 800. We started at a higher number, I think, but happy to continue to have that discussion. Also, that right now the 1,500 is, as someone mentioned, that it must be provided for early voting, but there's nothing that prohibits a smaller population institution from making the same request. So that is not unavailable to smaller campuses the way that this is written.
Representative Torkelson, any final question?
Well, another thing, just a comment. Frankly, the mandate is really the issue here. These activities are already permitted at the county's discretion if they should be requested. I believe counties are responsive to the needs of their constituents and institutions within their borders. This mandate could be costly and seems unnecessary.
Thank you. Representative Purcell, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to just thank our testifiers who spent an early Wednesday morning with us. This bill is good policy. It's good for our young adults. It's good for our state. It's good for our democracy. It provides an opportunity to more easily participate and vote for students enrolled in college, which is often difficult due to busy academic and work schedules, lack of transportation, et cetera, et cetera. House File 3447 offers students a valuable tool to boost these efforts and increase voter participation in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell renews the motion that House File 3447, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. House File 3447, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the general register. Okay. Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Vernig. So we have House File 3435 relating to census access to apartment buildings. While Representative Vernig moves up there, I will ask whether you would like to move House File 3435 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Vernig has moved the bill. Please describe your bill, Representative Vernig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 3435 is a refinement of work done in 2023. It would allow census workers access to multi-unit buildings beyond the current window in order for them to complete duties related to the decennial census. It removes barriers and affords the opportunity for accurate counts on the census, which benefits all of Minnesota and increased congressional representation and increased federal dollars to our state. 2016 data from the state demographer showed that Minnesota received $15.5 billion across 55 federal spending programs, reflecting data gathered in the 2010 census. This includes programs like Medicaid, highway planning and construction, Head Start, rural electrification loans and loan guarantees, and vocational rehab grants, to name a few. In 2023, we granted census enumerators access to multi-unit buildings from January 1st to July 1st in any year in which the census was conducted. In consultation with the Department of Administration and the state demographer, the six-month window might be a little too narrow to encompass all census-related activities, some of which occur before the January to June period. Some examples include pretests. The Census Bureau conducts pretests to make sure that the technology and survey design are operating well while they roll it out nationwide. This happens in years ending in 8 and 9. In-field canvassing. In-field address canvassing, where they send people out to check the number and addresses of housing units that may be new or confusing, such as college housing, where large houses are split into multi-units, or where there's new housing developments or new apartment complexes. In-person address canvassing is done late in the year ending in 9. Non-response follow-up. Non-response follow-up happens late in year ending in 0. This is where enumerators go out into the field to try to get answers from people who didn't respond, and this can carry on through late fall. Finally, natural disasters and or other unexpected events can impact this important work as well. As I stated, House File 3435 would allow census workers access to multi-unit buildings beyond the current window in order for them to complete the duties related to the decennial census. I will yield for a testifier and comments.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Susan Brower. I'm Minnesota's state demographer, and I work in the Department of Administration. I'm here to speak in support of House File 3435, which I believe will improve the count of Minnesotans in future censuses. Renters tend to be undercounted by the census, and expanding census worker access for all of these programs, not just non-response follow-up, I think will improve the count of the state overall. It will give us a much better chance. In 2020, Minnesota kept all of our 8 congressional seats because of 26 people counted. And so this is an example that every action that we take can help improve, even small actions can help improve the count and make a difference for Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, any member discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. I kind of look at this as the first of what I hope are many bills to repair poor work that was done last year. There should have been more attention paid to these dates, and this is not your fault, Representative Vernig. You're doing great work, and welcome to the committee. But this committee acted swiftly and in a partisan fashion, and this is just the first example, I believe, of issues that were passed in last year's bills and need further attention. So I look forward to a lot more repair work as we go through the session, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any additional comments? Any closing remarks, Representative Vernig?
No, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Vernig renews the motion that House File 3435 be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Nay. Okay, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Vernig. Finally, we have House File 1064 from Representative Hollins. I will move that House File 1064 be recommended to be placed on the general register. Representative Hollins, to your bill when you are ready.
Good morning, Chair, committee members. Happy Valentine's Day. This is no place I'd rather be than Elections Committee at 8:30 in the morning. I am here today to present a bill that has garnered bipartisan support. House File 1064 is a resolution proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which would provide that rights protected and extended by the Constitution are the rights of natural persons only and not corporations. The passage of this resolution is vitally important for two reasons. First, it seeks to limit the influence of money on our electoral processes. That is, in and of itself, a good enough reason to pass this resolution. Our American democracy works better when it's not beholden to wealthy and powerful interests rather than its citizenry and their votes. But secondly, it clarifies something in American law that is in desperate need of clarification, that corporations must not be allowed to have the same rights and privileges as the American people. Corporations are not like us. Even the hardest, most ambitious human is ultimately accountable to their family, their neighbors, and their community in general. I know that you all know this because you're sitting here at 8:30 in the morning on Valentine's Day as passionate civil servants supporting your community because you love your community and because you love the state of Minnesota. But by law, a corporation can only be accountable to the pursuit of profit. Even the most powerful people in the world must eventually make their peace with their own mortality, but a corporation persists beyond the lifespan of its shareholders. To allow the Supreme Court to grant the same rights and privileges of citizens to artificial entities is to fundamentally warp the nature of our democracy. And I believe we have a number of testifiers here who would like to speak on this issue, so I will cede the rest of my time to them.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Yes, I do have several testifiers. I will ask testifiers to keep their remarks to about 2 minutes. You can run over by a couple sentences, but we will be keeping time. We do want to make sure we have time for discussion as well. So first on the list is Jeff Clark, and Jeff Clark will be followed by Andrew Irvin. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Freiberg, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Clark. I'm a resident of St. Paul and a supporter of Minnesota Move to Amend. HF 1064 calls for a U.S. constitutional amendment to let Congress manage campaign financing and constrain litigation from favoring big money and corporate power. Open Secrets reports that in the 2022 race in CD2 between Angie Craig and Tyler Kistner, there was $18.8 million spent by independent groups. This was $7 million more than was spent by the two campaigns combined. Some of that money from sources not even eligible to vote for these candidates. 90% of this spending was against rather than for a candidate. The HF 1064 amendment would enable Congress to control spending without judicial interference. Consider, if such an amendment were already ratified, legislation like Minnesota's Democracy for the People Act would have no serious court challenge. Megacorporations benefit from personhood status in other ways, too. They should operate within existing laws that benefit the public good and check their goal of maximizing profits. But legally considered as persons, corporate legal defenses have used the First Amendment, the Fourth, Fifth, and Fourteenth Amendments, and the Contracts and Commerce Clauses to deflect accountability to such laws through litigation. The amendment would establish a level playing field for all artificial entities to be governed by law and not by assumed rights as if they were human beings. An example local would be Minnesota Sands against the county of Winona, a process that's still in process. They haven't prevailed yet, but their case was based on the fact that the regulations in Winona County are a violation of the Commerce Clause. And, of course, they're entitled to that because the Supreme Court considers them to be persons. Okay. Finally, the memorializing resolution does have a practical purpose. Sending it to Congress builds public pressure for drafting an amendment. 22 states have already applied this pressure. Minnesota should become the 23rd state. I urge you to vote for HF 1064. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Andrew Irvin, and after Andrew Irvin will be Kathy Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Andrew Irvin, and I'm a volunteer with the Minnesota chapter of Move to Amend, which is strongly behind this bill. My testimony focuses on the effect that the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission and the SpeechNow.org versus Federal Election Commission decisions, both from 2010, have had on money in the American political system. SpeechNow.org was heard in the U.S. Court of Appeals some months after the Citizens United decision. And this was her, and the court found that in their analysis of the Citizens United decision, that it required it to, in quotes, conclude that the government has no anti-corruption interest in limiting contributions to an independent expenditure group, close quote. The U.S. government declined to appeal this decision in face of Citizens United. Together, these two decisions have led to the creation of super PACs, or political action committees, with unlimited fundraising and spending capabilities. What we have found, according to Open Secrets, is that in the 2016 campaign cycle, a presidential election year and a very competitive one, there was $1.8 billion raised by super PACs. We had a similarly competitive presidential election in 2020, and we've now nearly doubled the money raised to $3.4 billion. The track we're on is very concerning. While anyone may contribute to a super PAC, the reality is that...
You can finish up a couple of sentences or two if you...
Okay. Well, so you have my written testimony there. And we are seeing also money coming from... there's dark money involved, too, which is explained in the written testimony. So please support HF 1064 as an important step towards decreasing the power of those with great wealth and increasing the power of those without wealth. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Kathy Peterson, and after Kathy Peterson will be Sharon Torrens. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Kathy Peterson. I'm a resident of Duluth. I am reading testimony written by Barbara Gerton from South St. Paul, who could not be here today. Good morning to the committee chair, the vice chair, and all the committee members. The representative democracy we think we have no longer exists. We no longer have a government of, by, and for the people. Each vote in a political election no longer has the impact intended. Today, money in politics is a huge enterprise and a major concern of voters. Many Minnesotans who participated in money in politics listening sessions expressed the one person, one vote is a basic tenet of a representative democracy. When large amounts of money are given by a relatively small number of voters and an even greater amount is given by non-voters, such as corporations and other legally constructed entities, the equalizing power of one person, one vote is annulled. This outsized influence of money provides power to a few. Our country is in need of strong elected officials who value our Republican form of government more than their desire to hold an office. We need representatives and senators like you all who will reset the definition of we the people to mean human beings only. Equally necessary, it must be made clear that money is not a First Amendment right of free speech and that it shall be regulated in political campaigns. I ask for your yes vote to pass H.R. 1064. Be the champions for the representative democracy we deserve as Americans, and I thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Sharon Torrens, and after Sharon Torrens will be Vicki Barnes. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, sir. Yes, I'm Sharon Torrens, and I want to thank Representative Hollins for introducing this and Chair Freiberg for hearing it. I'm a member of the Legislative Committee for Clean Elections Minnesota, and a member of several other nonpartisan public interest groups. I'm here today as a representative of these groups to voice our support for House File 1064. As you know, the Citizens United decision came down in 2010, and it has had an enormous and negative impact on our democracy. Declaring that money is speech and corporations are people would, I believe, boggle the minds of our founders. For example, take this quote from Thomas Jefferson regarding interpretation of the Constitution. Quote, instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform to the probable one in which it was passed. The importance of dark money in our state's politics was manifested by the passage here last session of the Democracy for the People Act, which was blocked by a judge after an immediate lawsuit filed against the law alleged that its transparency provision regarding foreign influence chills free speech. So, U.S. citizens do not even have the right to know when non-citizens are attempting to influence our system of government. And if we attempted to regulate campaign contributions or to regulate political spending in general, that would, of course, be declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. There is a Pew report from 2023 showing that 72% of Americans say there should be limits on the amount of money individuals and organizations can spend on political campaigns. And this goes across ideological and demographic lines. As elected officials, you see the impact of this distortion of our democracy every day that you're in office. 22 states have passed this resolution. Let's get on board. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Vicki Barnes, and after Vicki Barnes will be Jay Johnson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and committee members. Good morning to you all. My name is Vicki Barnes. I'm a volunteer Minnesota State Chapter Leader for American Promise, a national nonprofit group formed in 2016 out of concern that engagement with conservative voters on this amendment effort was lacking. In Minnesota, my volunteers and I work in the rural areas, interacting and being welcomed by folks who are eager to share how they feel about the outsized voice of billionaires and super PACs in our elections. And the relief that there is a mechanism in place to address this issue changes their demeanor, and they are quick to sign a pledge of support. House File 1064 represents how powerless and disillusioned voters feel. These are the words of the people. I urge you to read it with that in mind. This same resolution wording is what over 100 cities and towns in our neighboring state of Wisconsin have passed in citizen initiatives. In fact, 84% of voters in Janesville, Wisconsin, approved this resolution while also reelecting Paul Ryan to Congress. And this resolution would have been passed here in Minnesota a decade ago if Minnesota had a statewide citizen initiative capability. Not that I'm advocating for that. Ultimately, it is Congress that will write the amendment proposal in a bipartisan manner, and as a two-thirds count is needed per Article 5 of the Constitution. This amendment will be written in a way that enables Congress and the states to set reasonable spending limits in campaigns, elections, and ballot measures, thereby restoring the ability of self-government to the people and sovereignty to the states. But to encourage that, we need the power of state resolutions calling on Congress to act, as well as to demonstrate that Minnesota is ready to ratify. As the 23rd state to pass a resolution in support, a bipartisan vote, Minnesota might just be the tipping point to get more states currently having the same debate to push forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Jay Johnson, and after Jay Johnson is Aaron Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, ranking members, and committee member. I'm Jay Johnson from Chanhassen, Minnesota. I'm a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, retired Civil Environmental Engineer, retired Certified Industrial Hygienist. I was a small town public works director and a city councilman. After retiring from all these jobs, I've been a volunteer, including making 20 trips to Nigeria to consult with the Lutheran Church of Christ in Nigeria on clean water, sanitation, economic development. I've been to all 50 states and many countries and several continents. I have seen the corrupting effects of money around the world, As a civil affairs officer, I've worked with government officials in several countries and seen the corrupting effects that money has on politicians and government officials. I've seen the desire of people to rid themselves of the pay-to-play system we have here and abroad, where the big men with the pockets full of cash are heard in the halls of government, while the little guy is too busy trying to survive and has little access to those same halls. As an American Promise booth at county fairs in red areas, I hear the people say, yes, I agree, I will sign your pledge, but you'll never get those darn Democrats to sign up. And then I go to the blue areas, and they say, yes, I agree, but you'll never get those darn Republicans to sign up. Both bases want this. If there's ever been an idea that the vast majority of people want is the ability to be heard over the voice of the big money interest. Please pass HF 1064 and bring back the type of American democracy that our founders had envisioned and tell Congress that this is what Minnesota wants. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The last testifier who signed up is Aaron Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Aaron Anderson. I live in Eagan, Minnesota. My testimony, good morning. I live and vote in District 52B. I'm here today as a volunteer for American Promise, a nonprofit dedicated to protecting American democracy and the citizens it is supposed to serve. In that role, I am speaking in support of House File 1064 and the aim that it endorses, overturning Citizens United via a constitutional amendment. Every representative on this committee knows their constituents are bone weary of a political process dominated by negative advertising, partisan division, and the gridlock that results. Too many people simply resign interest and participation out of frustration. Much worse, it's far too understandable that they do. Politics and government can only reclaim the people's esteem if Americans are given a valid reason to trust our system. Soaring campaign costs fueled by billions of dollars of anonymous donations, usually routed through multiple political action committees, will not do so. But legally, that is precisely what is allowed and practiced by both major parties and, more importantly, by every industry and interest imaginable. Citizens United wrested away from us our ability to govern the very basis of our government, our elections. Representation is increasingly won through donations instead of democracy. There are few, if any, safeguards against foreign money making its way into our elections. And we all know it's never promised that the biggest checkbook has the interests of the people at heart. We know our own interests. The design and intent of our government rests on our ability to act on them. Citizens United hobbles that capacity. Our own interests, however we each define them as actual citizens and not as corporations, unions, or lobbies, demand that we regain this vital power. I urge this committee to support House File 1064 and for the Minnesota legislature to adopt it. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the people who have signed up. So we do have, I'd like to turn now to, there's an amendment, and then I'd like to make sure we have time for debate. So I think I'll go to the amendment first. I see Representative Torkelson, you're grabbing the microphone. Would you like to offer the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would offer the A1 amendment.
Okay, the A1 amendment has been offered. Two-year amendment, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The language of this bill as presented by Representative Hollins is interesting. Before I go to the details of the amendment, I just have to ask a quick question of the author. You mentioned bipartisan support for this. Can you describe for me who in the House or Senate is supporting your bill?
Representative Hollins.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Torkelson. I'm sorry, perhaps I should have been clearer. I meant bipartisan support within the community, both within my district and, as you've heard from the testifiers, across the state of Minnesota. Regardless of political party, people are supportive of overturning Citizens United.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that clarification, Representative Hollins. I do appreciate it. You also mentioned artificial entities that live beyond a person's lifetime. This amendment actually expands the inclusion of other artificial entities that have the same sort of lifetime, such as labor unions and nonprofits. We know that here in Minnesota, there are huge amount of money spent by those groups on election activity. The author of this bill in the Senate indicated in his presentation that he would like to see it be broader. I don't know why he didn't put that in language, but he didn't. So we're correcting his mistake with this amendment, Mr. Chair, and adding labor unions and nonprofits to the language.
Representative Hollins, do you have any comments to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. While I appreciate the concept of the amendment, I would urge a no vote. I believe that, especially labor unions, they are democratically elected leadership, and they don't have the same obligations to their fiscal duties are not the same as corporations are. They are representing members and not merely shareholders. Shareholders are a totally different entity because you can own multiple shares of a corporation, whereas when you're in a union, every person gets to have a voice, and they are representing the voice of those people collectively. So I would urge a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hollins. I really appreciate this bill. And so for those in this room, and I'm not going to force you to do this, but I would bet every person in this room, possibly except for myself, takes money from PACs and lobbyists. And for all the testifiers, thank you for testifying, and thank you for pointing out that there is a real problem with money in our elections. Representative Hollins, if you are not willing to take this amendment, then a labor union such as the Minnesota Teachers Union, do you know the amount of money that they have put into school board elections? And are you saying that a small group of elite people, where they put their money, should determine the outcome of an election in Minnesota versus the people of that school district?
Representative Hollins.
I'm not sure how to answer that question. What I will say is I would not consider a teachers union a small group of elite people. They are literally the people on the ground that are teaching students on a regular basis. And I don't know how much. I guess your question was, to how much money have they put into it? Is that what the question is?
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think that needs to be considered and looked at very, very closely. And I don't think that's the direction that you're looking, because your testifiers are saying we don't want money to, alter our elections. And yet your bill is excluding some very, very powerful entities in Minnesota, and I'm going to say the teachers union is one, very provable. And if we want to take another example, we could look at nonprofits. So again, to all the testifiers that testified here, and I'm with you on the dark money, okay, but I want you to understand the hypocrisy that we're witnessing in this room. There's clear hypocrisy here in Minnesota if we do not also put in the same bill to exemplify, to remove labor unions and nonprofits, and to pretend that they are not influencing the elections. So Planned Parenthood, a nonprofit, huge amount of money coming from the state of Minnesota, then influencing our elections. And you're going to say right now to this committee that you're testifying that you would like the Democrats to vote against this amendment to not include them. I just want to make sure you're crystal clear that there are big unions, big nonprofits that are influencing the state of Minnesota. We only have to look at the 2022 election, and every person in this room can remember who was labeled extremists on the abortion issue in the state of Minnesota in the 2022 election, being driven by nonprofit groups. So please, you know, consider that when you are telling your Democrat friends that you don't want to accept this amendment because it's a real, real hypocritical point. And to all your testifiers, they maybe didn't understand this. They maybe didn't understand that they were being excluded.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think maybe Representative Altendorf, I just want to...
Oh, thank you. We're not in the Senate anymore. Direct you to the language, because for folks in the room and also for you, Representative Altendorf, I think you don't understand the language. If you look at the Be It Resolved clause, Section 2, it says any entity, including any organization or association of one or more persons, which includes literally every kind of entity you can imagine, and we have many. The whereas clause is a lot of things, but as we make resolutions, the be it resolved clause is the thing that we will both send to Congress and that will have legal meaning. What this does is return us to the pre-Citizens United world, which impacts those folks. And so I think that political grandstanding aside, I think we both can support this, because if you're saying, and if we all are saying, that what we worry about is money in our politics, dark money in our politics, money on all sides of issues, then you should support requesting Congress to propose an amendment that any entity, including any organization or association of one or more persons, shall have no rights under the Constitution separate from the rights of their members. So I would just direct us to the language that we're trying to pass and make sure that for folks in the room and folks on camera, let's focus on the language that we have in front of us. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bliss or Davis, I thought I saw your hands wiggle earlier.
No, I just...
Okay. All right. Okay.
Hear what Duane has.
Okay. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And frankly, oftentimes we try to clarify and make it more easily recognizable language. The inference, we can easily say, well, we inferred this and that. We've had interpretations by the courts and other entities that didn't include our original intent, let alone inferences. So actually, if the representative that just spoke says it's already included, then there should be no objection to clearly including the language to make it more readily understood that it's not just a subgroup of the entities that there are concerns with. So I want to thank the representative for supporting the idea that we include all these other groups, and I await her positive vote on the amendment.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would just to argue this is clarifying language and an excellent opportunity for this committee to actually have bipartisan support in our elections. Let's do that. Vote yes on this amendment. It's just you testified that it is already included in here. Representative Quam, great point. You're just bringing clarifying language. Representative Altendorf is not misunderstanding this. In fact, I'm wondering if because we want to clarify language, perhaps you're misunderstanding what we're trying to do. We're not trying to take political shots here. But here is your opportunity to have bipartisan support on something. Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, did you have any closing remarks on the amendment?
Well, yeah, I do, Mr. Chair. First, in relation to President Greenman's remarks earlier, she said, I assume she was commenting on the amendment because that's what we're discussing. She said, we should pass this. So I welcome her support. You want to clarify your remarks, Representative Greenman?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Torkelson, or Lee Torkelson.
I've spent a lot of time in the
like
Senate.
It that way.
I appreciate that, and it's nice to be back. No, I was talking about the entire amendment as, or the entire 1064 as drafted, and the purpose and weight behind it that I was reading in section two.
Representative Torkelson,
thank you. I just want to make sure that was clear, Mr. Chair, because she did say during her remarks regarding this amendment that we should pass it, and I just didn't want her to be misunderstood. So I hope you appreciate
thank
my
you,
concern
Lee
for your clarity. I think we've covered this quite thoroughly, Mr. Chair. The Representative Agreement practically said, you know, that's the intent, so why not make the language line up with the intent? I urge yes vote on this. I request a roll call.
Okay. Representative Bliss, did you?
Just real quick, just an example of the clarification language. We have a bill author who states very clearly this does not include labor unions, and we have a representative at the table that says it does. So I think this is just clarifying language, and I think we should vote it in.
All right. Roll call has been Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that what the language says is what the language says, and that's literally what we are trying to vote on. But I do want to recognize what my colleagues across the aisle are saying and let them know that I am open to having continued conversation around this. I am going to still recommend a no vote today, and in particular, that's because I think we have a responsibility to speak with stakeholders about this and have a conversation about the people with the people who are supporting this before making a decision. So thank you.
Thank you. A roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
No.
Vice Chair Greenman.
No.
Minority Lead Torkelson.
Aye.
Representative Agbaje.
No.
Representative Altendorf.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Nay.
Representative Bliss.
Yes.
Representative Coulter.
No.
Representative Davis.
Yes.
Representative Frederick.
No.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Vernig.
No.
There being eight nays and five ayes, the amendment does not prevail. To the bill as not amendment, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Do you believe that non-citizens should be influencing our elections?
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author. While non-citizens are part of NGOs, many NGOs, and many labor unions, and so that's part of the intent from the debate has been to, there's outside money, dark money, money we don't know where it's coming from, and that's part of the intent that was met with the language in the amendment that was rejected, is that if we're going to do something, we should do something instead of partially do something and in the gray area do something. But this is in regards to a U.S. Supreme Court decision. And participating in that decision were labor unions and other entities that aren't specifically delineated within this bill. And in fact, some of the NGOs that spoke, those entities have support from you know, people were not sure where all the money comes from. And if we're going to actually do an effective improvement to decrease the amount of unknown dark money, outside influence from rich entities, including foreign nationals and foreign governments, we need to do a thorough, well-understood, and clearly delineated intent to prevent that. And I think the language we have is not as clearly stated as some of the stuff that we've had misinterpretations in the courts and elsewhere. So when you've been in the legislature long enough, you've seen that we've had to come back and clarify. So some of us believe we should actually start out with very clear, delineated language that leaves no doubt that the intent is to prevent the billionaires, the rich, non-citizens, and foreign entities from influencing our election. And that was my interpretation of the testimony, is that we're tired of all this money coming in from these outside groups, and the concerns were broader than specifically noting only one type of entity. And if we do our due diligence and serve our citizens to the fullest extent, we have the best legislation and have it clear. Unfortunately, I don't think that this language is clear, even for the author's intent that non-citizens not be able to influence, because it doesn't delineate and specifically state entities that have non-citizens and foreign money coming in. So I'm sorry that I'm not able to support this in its current state. I am saddened at the fact that this committee is where we should have worked on improving language, not the vague thing that we hear and heard last session of, oh, we'll get together, I'm open to, and it never happened. Here in front of the people, that they can see and hear us, is where we should do the work, not behind, you know, in some back room tweaking language, because the people deserve to see the work done in the broad daylight of committee.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hollins, for bringing this bill. And I will say, as I was in law school before Citizens United, and I became a voting rights lawyer right as it was decided, and it really changed the landscape in terms of what legislators, what Congress, what folks could do in terms of trying to do what I think the people are asking us to do, which is have rules and regulations that ensure that it is the people's voice that are in our elections. It's the people's voice and our constituent voices that are driving what we're doing here in the legislature. And what I really appreciate about this, and I'm not surprised to see people from across Minnesota testifying on this, because before Citizens United, this was the rule of the land in Minnesota. In Minnesota, 211B prohibited corporations from spending outside and inside. And after Citizens United, that had to change. And so now corporations are prevented from giving directly to candidates. But we can't, even if we wanted to, and it feels like in this room we would want to pass a law that goes back to Minnesotans' understanding that corporations shouldn't be able to spend. And so what I appreciated about this resolution, and it's just a resolution, is that we are telling, we are changing the Constitution in response to, I think, a wrongly decided Supreme Court decision. What we have seen in the last, since Citizens United, since 2010, and again, I think we have don't need to, like, we have all on all sides cited some of the evidence, is that flood of outside money. And I really appreciate what you're saying, Representative Quam, about foreign influences, especially through the corporate form, because I've been thinking a lot about that, because we passed a foreign influence corporation ban last year, trying to, within the parameters of Citizens United, which allows us to deal with that. We currently, by law, federal law and state law, prohibit foreign citizens from giving in our elections. And what this was trying to do is saying you can't do through a corporate form what we don't let you do by law. And right now, that's in courts, and we have the biggest lobbyist group for the biggest corporations in Minnesota and America, the Chamber, is claiming that because of Citizens United, not only can we not limit corporations, because we can't under Citizens United, but we also can't limit foreign influence corporations from doing what we can, what natural-born citizens can't do. And to me, that's actually extends the power of Citizens United. It supercharges it. It is not what I believe the current law is, but it is shows you how far we have come since that 2010 decision. And so I think that as we think about why the urgency of this is, I do think it is we have citizens, we have voters, we have folks all over the state of Minnesota who are asking us to do this. And if this is how that decision is being interpreted, we all should be really invested in saying no. That you can't do, corporations can't do what we don't allow legal citizens and Minnesota residents and all those folks to do. And so I really appreciate this conversation. I really appreciate this bill, and I hope we both follow those 22 other states and also get Congress to pass it so we can change the law at the federal level or in our Constitution. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to request a roll call.
Thank you. I thought you maybe were for... anyway, yeah, I thought maybe there was something else you wanted to say there. Yeah, she told me previously she wanted to request a roll call. I think she just got a little caught up in her oratory.
Yeah, I was hoping that was your wrap-up signal. Yeah. Yes. Perhaps you're just impersonating an NFL referee.
Yes, probably badly. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we debated much of this last year, the fact that international unions that have international in their title are not mentioned in this work, weren't mentioned last year. It's a shame that we are, and free speech issues are tough. They really are. Where do you draw the line? Where does free speech start and where does it end? The arbitrary use of foreign ownership being defined at a very, very low number and virtually impossible for any corporation to keep track of every single shareholder that owns a share in their company is, I think, ridiculous. But that's an argument for last year. I'll be voting against this today. I don't think we're addressing the issue in a broad bipartisan fashion. I've given this speech, I think, at every committee meeting we've had, and that this committee in the past has always operated in a bipartisan fashion. Governors have refused to sign bills that were not passed with bipartisan support, and now we have, because of slim majorities in what's called the DFL, although I read an article recently that described how few farmers there are in the DFL, but that's another topic. We'll be voting against this. I would hope that we would work in a more bipartisan fashion in the future, but apparently we're off to the same old procedure as last year.
Thank you. Representative Hollins, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. I appreciate your time. I appreciate the robust discussion. What I will say is I believe there is a bright line of where free speech begins and ends, and it's with natural-born people. So I would recommend a yes vote on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. A roll call having been requested, I will renew the motion that House File 1064 be referred, placed on the general register. Sorry, I was too eager to move away all my papers. So the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Aye.
Minority Lead Torkelson. Representative Agbaje?
Yes.
Representative Altendorf?
No.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bliss?
No.
Representative Coulter?
Aye.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Representative Purcell?
Aye.
Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Vernig?
Aye.
There being 8 ayes and 5 nays, House File 1064 is recommended to be placed on the general register. Any closing remarks? We are at time. Okay, seeing none, this committee is adjourned.